5. The battle cruiser Kissed the Blades caught the cruise ship just passing through on the outskirts of the Ekro system. The culture craft, 10 kilometers of sleek beauty, host to 200,000 holiday travelers of umpteen different species types, hove to as soon as a battle cruiser came within range. But the affronter vessel put a shot across its bows anyway, just on general principles. The more determinedly assiduous revelers hadn't believed the announcement about the war anyway, and thought the missile warhead's detonation, which lit up the skies ahead of the ship, was just some particularly big but otherwise unimpressive firework. It had been close. Another hour's warning, and the culture ship's hurried reconfiguring and matter-scavenging engine rebuild would have ensured its escape, but it wasn't to be. The two ships joined. In the reception vestibule, a small party of people met a trio of suited affronters as they emerged from the airlocks in a swirl of cool mists.
"You are the ship's representative."
"Yes," the squat figure at the front of the human said. "And you?"
"I am Colonel Alien Befriender, First Class, 5-tied Humid Year 7 of the Winter Hunter Tribe, and the battle cruiser Kiss the Blade. This ship is claimed as prize in the name of the Affront Republic, according to the normal rules of war. If you obey all our instructions promptly, there is every possibility that no harm will come to you, your passengers, or crew. In case you have any illusions concerning your status, you are now our hostages. Any questions?"
"None that I either can't guess the answer to, or imagine you'd answer truthfully," the Avatar said. "Your jurisdiction is accepted under force of arms alone. Your actions while this situation persists will be recorded. Nothing less than the total destruction of this vessel, atom by atom, will wipe out that record. And when, in due course..."
"Yes, yes, I'll contact my lawyers now. Now, take me to your best suites, fitted out for affront physiology."
The girl was indignant with a kind of ferocity probably only somebody from the peace faction could muster in such a situation. "But we're the peace faction," she protested for the 5th or 6th time. We're like the true culture, the way it used to be."
"Ah,"
Leffitt said, grimacing as somebody pushed behind him and forced his chest into the front of the bar. He glanced round, scowling, and ruffled his wings back into shape. The starboard lounge of the Zoannan was crowded, the ship was crowded, and he could see his wings were going to end up in a terrible shape by the time this was over. Mind you, there were compensations. Somebody pushed into the bar and squeezed the peace faction girl closer to him so that her bare arm touched him, and he could feel the warmth of her hip against his. She smelled wonderful.
"Now that could be your problem," he said, trying to sound sympathetic, "calling yourselves the true culture, you see. To the Tyr-Syndricate, and even to the Affront, that could sound, well, confusing. But everybody knows we don't have anything to do with war. It's just so unfair."
She flicked her short black hair and stared into the drug bowl she held. It was fuming, too. "Fucking war!" She sounded close to tears. Leffitt judged the time right to put his arm round her. She didn't seem to mind. He thought the better of hinting that in his own small way he might have helped start the war. Sort of thing some people might be impressed with, but not all. Besides, he'd given his word, and the tendency had been rewarded for its tip-off to the mainland with this very ship. currently engaged in the highly humanitarian task of helping to evacuate Tyr habitat of all temporally undesirable aliens. Not to mention earning the tendency some much-needed cordiality credit, with a whole raft of other involved and strands of the culture. The girl sighed deeply, and held the drug bowl to her face, letting some of the heavy grey smoke tip towards her exceedingly pretty little nose. She glanced round at him with a small brave smile, her gaze rising over his shoulder. "Like your wings," she said. He smiled.
"Why, thank you, damn. Ah, my dear."
The professor blinked. Yes, it really was an affronter floating at the far end of the room near the windows. Suit like a small tubby spacecraft, all gleaming knobbly bits, articulated limbs, and glistening prisms. The gauzy white curtains blew in around it, letting bright high-angled sunlight flow in waves across the carpet. Oh, dear, was that her underwear draped over a hassock in the affronter's shadow? "I beg your pardon," she said. She wasn't sure she'd heard right.
"Fisi cloethel beltranza coriam el pueri da merire. You have been deemed the senior human representative on the orbital named Clothel. You are hereby informed that this orbital is claimed in the name of the Affront Republic. All culture personnel are now Affront citizens, third class. All orders from superiors will be obeyed. Any resistance will be treated as treason."
The professor rubbed her eyes. "Cloudsheen, is that you?" she asked the affronter. The destroyer Wingclipper had arrived the day before. With a cultural exchange group, the university had been expecting for some weeks. Cloudsheen was the ship's captain. They'd had a good talk about pan-species semantics at the party just the night before. Intelligent, surprisingly sensitive creature, not remotely as aggressive as she'd expected. This looked like him, but different. She had a disquieting feeling the extra bits on his suit were weapons.
"Captain Cloudsheen, if you please, Professor," the affronter said, floating closer.
It was directly above her skirt, lying crumpled on the floor. Heavens, she had been messy last night. "Are you serious?" she asked. She had a strong urge to fart, but she held it in. She was oddly concerned that the affronter would think she was being insulting.
"I am perfectly serious, Professor. The affront and the culture are now at war."
"Oh," she said. She glanced over at her terminal brooch, lying on an extension of the bed's headboard. Well, the news flash light was winking right enough, practically strobing, in fact. Must be urgent indeed. She thought, shouldn't you be addressing this to the hub?
"It refuses to communicate," the front officer said. "We have surrounded it. You have been deemed most senior culture, ex-culture, I should say, representative in its place. This is not a joke, Professor, I'm sorry to say. The orbital has been mined with AM warheads. If it proves necessary, your world will be destroyed. The full cooperation of yourself and everybody else on the orbital will help ensure this does not happen."
"Well, I don't accept this honor, Cloudsheen. I..." The affronter had turned and was floating back towards the windows again. It swiveled in the air as it retreated.
"You don't have to," it said. "As I said, you have been deemed..." "Well, then," she said, "I deem you to be acting without any authority I care to recognize, and—"
The affronter darted through the air towards her, and stopped directly above the bed, making her flinch despite herself. She smelled something cold and toxic.
"Professor!" Clouchine said. "This is not an academic debate or some common room word game. You are prisoners and hostages, and all your lives are forfeit. The sooner you understand the realities of the situation, the better. I know as well as you that you are in no way in charge of the orbital, but certain formalities have to be observed, regardless of their practical irrelevance. I consider that duty has now been discharged, and frankly, that's all that matters, because I have the AM warheads, and you don't."
It drew quickly away, sucking a cool breeze behind it. It stopped just before the windows again.
"Lastly," it said, "I am sorry to have disturbed you. I thank you personally and on behalf of my crew for the reception party. It was most enjoyable."
He left. The curtains soughed in and out, slowly golden. Her heart, she was surprised to discover, was pounding. The attitude adjuster woke them one by one, telling each the same story. Accessionary threat near Asperi, Deluger craft mimicking culture ship configurations, cooperation of a front, extreme urgency, obey me, or our affront allies if I should be lost. Some of the vessels were immediately suspicious, or at least puzzled. The confirmatory messages from other craft, the no fixed abode, the different tan, and the not invented here, convinced them in every case. Part of the attitude adjuster felt sick. It knew it was doing the right thing in the end, but at a simple surface level it felt disgust at the deception it was having to foist upon its fellow ships. It tried to tell itself that it would all end with little or no blood spilled and few or no mind deaths, but it knew that there was no guarantee. It had spent years thinking all this through, shortly after the proposition had been put to it 70 years earlier, and had known then, accepted then, that it might come to this, but it had always hoped it would not. Now the moment was at hand. It was starting to wonder if it had made a mistake, but knew it was too late to turn back now. Better to believe that it had been right then. And now it was merely being short-sighted and squeamish. It could not be wrong. It wasn't wrong. It had had an open mind, and it had become convinced of the rightness of the course which was being suggested, and in which it would play such an important part. It had done as it had been asked to do. It had watched the affront, studied them, immersed itself in their history, culture, and beliefs. And in all that time it had achieved a kind of sympathy for them, an empathy even, and at the start, perhaps, a degree of admiration for them. But it had also built up a cold and terrible hatred of their ways. In the end, it thought it understood them, because it was just a little like them. It was a warship, after all. It was built, designed to glory in destruction, when it was considered appropriate. It found, as it was rightly and properly supposed to, an awful beauty in both the weaponry of war and the violence and devastation which that weaponry was capable of inflicting. And yet it knew that attractiveness stemmed from a kind of insecurity, a sort of childishness. It could see that by some criteria, a warship, just by the perfectly articulated purity of its purpose, was the most beautiful single artifact the culture was capable of producing. And at the same time, understand the paucity of moral vision such a judgment implied. To fully appreciate the beauty of a weapon was to admit to a kind of short-sightedness close to blindness, to confess to a sort of stupidity. The weapon was not itself. Nothing was solely itself. The weapon, like anything else, could only finally be judged by the effect it had on others, by the consequences it produced in some outside context, by its place in the rest of the universe. By this measure, the love or just the appreciation of weapons was a kind of tragedy. The attitude adjuster thought it could see into the souls of the affronters. They were not the happy-go-lucky life and soul of the party grand fellows with a few bad habits they were commonly thought to be. They were not thoughtlessly cruel in the course of seeking to indulge other more benign and even admirable pleasures. They were not merely terrible rascals. They gloried first and foremost in their cruelty. Their cruelty was the point. They were not thoughtless. They knew they hurt their own kind and others, and they revelled in it. It was their purpose. The rest, the robust joviality, the blokish vivacity, was part happy accident, part cunningly exaggerated ploy, the equivalent of an angelic-looking child discovering that a glowing smile will melt the severest adult heart and excuse almost any act, however dreadful. It had agreed to the plan now coming to fruition with a heavy soul. People would die, minds would be destroyed because of what it was doing. The ghastly danger was giga death crime, mass destruction, utter horror. The attitude adjuster had lied, it had deceived, it had acted by what it knew would be the consensual opinion of all but a few of its peers with massive dishonor. It was all too well aware its name might live for millennia hence as that of a traitor, as an abhorrence, an abomination. Still, it would do what it had become convinced had to be done, because to do otherwise would be to wish an even worse self-hatred upon itself, the ultimate abomination of disgust at oneself. Perhaps, it told itself, as it brought another slumbering warcraft to wakefulness, the accession would make everything all right. The half-thought was already ironic, but it continued with it anyway. Yes, maybe the accession was the solution. Maybe it really was worth all that was being risked in its name, and capable of bringing placid resolution. That would be sweet. The excuse takes over. The casus belli brings peace. Like fuck, it thought. The ship sneered at itself, examining the idiotic thoughts, and then discarding it with probably less contempt than it deserved. It was, anyway, too late to reconsider now. Too much had been done already. The pitten's mind was already dead, choosing self-destruction rather than compromise. The human who'd been the only other conscious sentience in the rock had been killed, and the destored ships would speed, utterly deceived, to what could well prove to be their doom. The future alone knew who or what else they would take with them. The war had begun, and all the attitude adjuster could do was play out the part it had agreed to play. Another warship mine surfaced to wakefulness. Accessionary threat ne esperi, the attitude adjuster told the newly woken ship, delusia craft mimicking culture ship configurations, cooperation of affronts, extreme urgency. Obey me, or our affront allies, if I should be lost. Confirmatory messages from the GSV No Fixed Abodes, the GCU Different Tan, and the MSV Not Invented Here, attached. The module Scopella Franquae left the urgencies of the instant behind for a moment, and retreated into a kind of simulation of its plight. The craft had a romantic, even sentimental streak, which Gunnar Hofoen had rarely glimpsed in all the 2 years they'd spent together on God's whole habitat, and which, indeed, it had deliberately kept hidden for fear of his ridicule. And it saw itself now as being like the castellan of some small fortified embassy in a teeming barbarian city far from the civilized lands that were his home. A wise, thoughtful man, technically a warrior, but more of a thinker, one who saw much more of the realities behind the embassy's mission than those in his charge, and who had devoutly hoped that his warrior skills would never be called upon. Well, that time had come. The native soldiers were hammering at the compound gates right now, and it was only a matter of time before the embassy compound fell. There was treasure in the embassy, and the barbarians would not rest until they had it. The castellan left the parapet where he'd looked out upon the besieging forces and retreated to his private chamber. His few troops were already putting up the best defense they could. Nothing he could say or do would do other than hinder them now. His few spies had been dispatched some time ago through a secret passageway into the city, to do what damage they could once the embassy itself was destroyed, as it surely must be. There was nothing else which awaited his attention, save this one decision. He'd already opened the safe and taken out the sealed orders. The paper was in his hand. He read it again. So it was to be destruction. He'd guessed as much. But it was still a shock somehow. It should not have come to this, but it had. He'd known the risks. They'd been pointed out at the beginning when he'd taken up his position. But he'd not really imagined for a moment that he would really be faced with either utter dishonor and the vicarious treachery of forced collaboration, or death at his own hand. There was, of course, no real choice. Call it his upbringing. He looked ruefully around the small private chamber that held the memories of home, his library, his clothes and keepsakes. This was him. This was who he was. The same beliefs and principles that had led him here to this lonely outpost required that there was no choice over surrender or death. But there was still one choice to make, and it was a bitter one to be given. He could destroy the embassy, and himself with it, of course, completely, so that all that would be left to the barbarians would be its stones. Or he could take the entire city with him. It was not just a city. In one sense, it was not even principally a city. It was a vast arsenal, a crowded barracks, and a busy naval port, altogether an important component of the barbarians' war efforts. Its destruction would benefit the side that the castellan was loyal to, the cause that he absolutely believed in. Arguably, it would save lives in the long run. Yet the city had its civilians, too. The outnumbering innocents that were the women and children and the subjugated underclasses, not to mention the blameless others from neutral lands, who just happened to find themselves caught up in the war through no fault of their own. Had he a right to snuff them out too by destroying the city? He put the piece of paper down. He looked at his reflection in a distant looking glass. Death. In all this choice, there was no doubt about his own fate, only about how he would be remembered. As humanitarian or weakling, as mass murderer or hero. Death. How strange to contemplate it now. He'd always wondered how he would face it. There was a certain continued existence, of course. He had faith in that. The assurances of the priests that his soul was recorded in a great book somewhere, and capable of resurrection. But the precise he was right now, That would assuredly end, and soon. That was over. Death, he remembered somebody saying once, was a kind of victory. To have lived a long, good life, a life of prodigious pleasure and minimal misery, and then to die, that was to have won. To attempt to hang on forever risked ending up in some as yet unglimpsed horror future. What if you lived forever? And all that had gone before, however terrible things had sometimes appeared to be in the past, however badly people had behaved to each other throughout history, was nothing compared to what was yet to come. Suppose, in the great book of days that told the story of everything, all the gone, done past was merely a bright, happy introduction, compared to the main body of the work, an unending tale of unbearable pain scraped in blood on a parchment of living skin. Better to die than risk that. Live well, and then die, so that the you that is you now can never be again. And only tricks can recreate something that might think it's you, but is not. The outer gates fell. He heard them go. The castellan stood up and went to the casement. In the courtyard, the barbarian soldiers flowed through to the last line of defense. Soon, the choice, the choice. He could spin a coin, but that would be cheap, unworthy. He walked to the device that would destroy the embassy compound, and the city too, if he chose. There was no choice here either, not really. There would be peace again. The only question was, when? He couldn't know if ultimately more people would suffer and die because he was choosing not to destroy the city. But at least this way, the damage and the casualties would be confined to the minimum for the longest possible time. And if in the future he would be judged to have done the wrong thing and to have made the incorrect decision, well, death had the other advantage, that he would not be present to suffer that knowledge of that judgment. He double-checked that the device was set so that only the embassy would be destroyed. He waited a moment longer to be sure that he was calm and clear about what he was doing. Then, as the tears came to his eyes, he activated the device. The module Scapella Franchi self-destructed in a blink of annihilatory energies centered on its AI core, obliterating it entirely. The module itself was blasted into a million pieces. The explosion sent a shiver through the fabric of God's whole habitat that was felt all the way round that great wheel. It took out a significant section of the surrounding inner docks area, and caused a rupture in the skin of the engineering compartment beneath. This was quickly repaired. The destroyer Riptolon was damaged, and would require a further week in dock, though there were no fatalities or serious injuries on board. The explosion killed 5 officers and a few dozen soldiers and technicians in the docks and smaller craft alongside the module. A number of semi-aware AI entities were also lost, and their cores later found to be corrupted by agent entities the module had succeeded infiltrating into the habitat systems shortly before its destruction, despite every precaution. These, or their descendants, continued to significantly reduce the habitat's contribution to the war effort for the duration of hostilities. So, what's it like being at war? Scary. When you have every reason to believe you may be sitting next to the real reason it was declared. The GCU, fate amenable to change, floated in a triangular pattern with the 2 Elentia vessels, Sober Counsel and Appeal to Reason. The 2 Elentia ships had repeatedly attempted to communicate with Accession, entirely without success. The fate was getting nervous, just waiting for the pressure building up of the crews of the two Alentia ships for more intrusive action to overcome the reticence of the craft themselves. The three craft had secretly declared their own little pact over the last few days, after the second Alentia ship had appeared on the scene. They'd exchanged drone and human avatars, opened up volumes of their mindsets they would not normally have exposed to craft of another society, and pledged not to act without consulting the others. That agreeable agreement would lapse if the Alentias chose to try to interfere with the accession. It would have to lapse to some extent anyway in a couple of days, when the MSV not invented here arrived, and the fate suspected started bossing everybody about. But it was trying desperately to dissuade the two Alentia ships from doing anything rash in the meantime. Are there any affront warships known to be anywhere in this volume? The appeal to reason asked. No, the fate amenable to change replied. In fact, they've been staying away and telling everybody else to do so as well. I suppose we should have guessed that was suspicious in itself. That's the trouble with people like them, I suppose. Whenever you think you're detecting the first signs of them starting to behave responsibly, it's just them being even more devious and underhand than usual. You think they want the accession? The sober counsel asked. It's possible. Perhaps they're not coming here, suggested the appeal to reason. Aren't they attacking the whole culture? There are reports of scores of ships and orbitals being taken. I don't know, the fate admitted. It looks like madness to me. They can't defeat the whole culture. But they're saying a ship store at this rock pittance has fallen, the sober council sent. Well, yes. Officially, there's still a blackout on that. But, off record, of course, if they are coming in this direction, I wouldn't want to be here in about a week's time. So, if we're going to get through to the entity, we'd better do it soon, the appeal to reason sent. Oh, don't start on about that again. You said yourself they might not be coming, the fate began, then broke off. Hold on! Are you getting this? Semi-wide beam, a front base, all trans, loop. Attention, all craft, in a Sperai near space. The entity located at, location sequence enclosed, was first discovered by the front cruiser Furious Purpose on trans N4.28.803.8+. And is hereby fully and rightfully claimed on the behalf of the Affront Republic as an integral and fully sovereign Affront property subject to Affront laws, edicts, rights, and privileges. In the light of the culture-provoked hostilities now existing between the Affront and the culture, the full custodial protection of Affront administration has been extended to the forementioned volume. And to that end, an ordinance absolutely prohibiting all non-Affront traffic within 10 standard light-years around the entity has been issued with immediate effects. And hence all craft inside this volume are ordered to vacate said volume forthwith. All craft and material found to be within this volume will be deemed to be in contravention of Affront law and in contempt of the Affront Supreme Committee, thus subjecting themselves to the full punitive might of the Affront military. To enforce said ordinance, 100-strong war fleet of ex-culture craft, which have chosen to renounce their previous allegiance to the enemy, have been dispatched to the above-mentioned location, with instructions ruthlessly to enforce this order. Glory to the Affront! So there, the sober council communicated. That's us told. And they can be here in a week, added the appeal to reason. That location they gave, the fate sense. Look where it's centered. Aha, replied the sober council. Aha, what? Asked the appeal to reason. It's not centered on the entity itself, the other ship pointed out. It's just off-center, where whatever happened to that little drone took place. The Furious Purpose is one of a couple of affronter craft that left here at the same time the fleet did. It could have been following the Peace Makes Plenty, the sober council told the culture ship. It's certainly the ship that returned to Tyr 36 days after what happened here. That's a little slow, the fate sense. According to my records, a meteorite-class light cruiser should have been able to do it in... Oh, wait a moment. It had an engine fault. And then, while it was on Tyr, it suffered some sort of... Oh, look! The accession was doing something. Stutter tight point M32, TRA at 4.28.883.1344. XGSV, anticipation of a new lover's arrival, thee. OGSV, sabbaticaler, no fixed abode. Right, I've thought about this. No, I will not help in trapping the serious callers only, or the shoot them later. I reported my previous misgivings, and the fact that I'd shared them with the other two craft, because in the course of my investigations into what I perceived as a dangerous conspiracy, I became convinced of the need to deal decisively with the affront. I still do not approve of the way this has been done. But by the time your plans became uncovered, it would arguably have caused more damage attempting to arrest them than letting them go ahead. I still find it hard to believe that the rogue ship which tricked the ship stored pittance was acting alone, and that you merely took advantage of the ruse despite your assurances. However, I have no evidence to the contrary. I've given my word, and I will not go public with all this, but I will consider that agreement dependent on the continued well-being and freedom from persecution of both the serious callers only and the shoot them later, as well, of course, as being contingent upon my own continued integrity. I don't doubt you'll think me either paranoid or ridiculous for systematizing this arrangement with various other friends and colleagues, particularly given the hostilities which commenced yesterday. I'm thinking of taking some sabbatical time myself soon and going off course schedule. I shall, in any event, be quitting the group. Stuttered tight point M32, TRA at 4.28.883.2182. XGSV, sabbaticaler, no fixed abode. OGSV, anticipation of a new lover's arrival, thee. I understand completely. There is, you must believe, no desire on our part to cause any harm to you or the two craft you mention. We have been concerned purely to expedite the resolution of this unfortunate state of affairs. There will be no recriminations, no witch hunts, no pogroms or purges on our behalf. With your assurance that this ends here, we are perfectly, quintessentially content. A great relief. Let me add that it is hard for me to find the words to communicate to you the depth of my, our, gratitude in this matter. You have shown irreproachable moral integrity, combined with a truly objective open-mindedness,
Virtues that all too often are regarded as being as tragically incompatible as they are infinitely desirable. You are an example to all of us. I beg you not to leave the group. We would lose too much. Please reconsider. No one would deny that you have earned 1,000 rests. But please take pity on those who would dare ask you to forgo one for their own selfish benefit. Thank you. However, my decision is irrevocable. Should I still be welcome? I may hope for a request to rejoin you at some point in the future, should some exceptional situation stimulate the thought that I might again be of service. My dear, dear ship, if you really must go, please do so with our fondest regards, so long as you swear never to forget that your invitation to restore your wisdom and probity to our small team stands in perpetuity.